Whose grandfather?
I was born in 1922 in Temperance, Michigan, in a house that was directly in back of Francis Food Plant, now removed, and the space is used as a parking lot. At that time, there were two stores, no banks, two churches, and no recreation area. There was a Baptist church on the corner, directly south of the bank, and there was a Free Methodist church where people tabled.
No Catholic churches.
There were no Catholic churches.
In fact, we actively opposed Catholic churches at that time. And there was no drink, because there was one, what would you call it, an ordinance?
A man named Anstead settled the area, and they put in all the deeds that there would be no intoxicating beverages sold within the city limits of Temperance for 100 years. And John Whitman had the grocery store. A man named Mortimer had his grocery store. And those were the only two in the whole area. Then several years later, a man named Jay Grant started a store on West Temperance Road, just about a half a block west of the red light. So they ended up with three groceries. John Whitman at one time started a Chevrolet dealership right across from what's now the confectionery. And then later on he switched to Ford. And he had a big dealership in Temperance, and now it's 2 miles south of Temperance, and his son Paul Whitman ran it for many years, and now Paul's son John runs the dealership. Now, Mortimer's store was where Leo Bolger's gas station now stands. Where the bank is, the old brick building bank, was a man named Raleigh Brunt's house. And then Monroe State Savings Bank bought it and converted it to made it a little larger and converted it to a bank.
That was a regular home on the corner.
Yeah.
Quite a nice home.
Now, where Tarosa's funeral home is, across from Francis Foodland, there was a farmhouse there named F.J. King. And that's the man I worked for. I started off quite young working for him. He was a farmer and he grew vegetables, flowers, berries, corn, almost everything. And after I was finished working for him for those few years, I decided I didn't want to be a farmer. No way. He's a man that his wife used to go down to Steelbush Market. And when I was old enough to drive, I would go down to the Ann Arbor Railroad Station right here in Temperance. They used to have a passenger train that went through twice a day, 8 o'clock in the morning and 4 at night. And I would take Mrs. Kinney to market down in Steelbush. Then I'd walk over to the Ann Arbor Railroad on Railroad Station on Cherry Street, and then I'd ride out to Temperance, and I'd get to Temperance at 8 o'clock. And then I'd work all day, and then at 4 o'clock I'd go back to the station and ride into Toledo, walk back down to Steelbush, and bring her home. That was three days a week I did that, and the other 3 days I just worked on the field. But it was an experience in selling, actually, because I would stay there sometimes for a while with her and help her sell the vegetables and flour. And at that time, they had a lot of gladiolas. And real early in the morning, all the florists would come through and take their pick before the regular traffic came. But it was kind of interesting. But where the golf course is now in Temperance, which is a sand hill, with an 80-acre parcel owned by Crawford, Arvin Kirk, and his son Crawford helped him farm it. And there was a lake there, as there is now, a small lake, and that's where the kids learned to swim. And there was some fish in it. They came up each spring and got stranded so that you could catch a few fish.
Oh, it was mucky and weedy, and you take your bathing suit and go down through the weeds and across the sand and down it. Oh, I can't believe we thought that was great. We get in there, we couldn't swim anything because it was too weedy and murky. We just got out and stood. But that's the best swimming you have.
That was towards the end of the summer. Then earlier summer, it wasn't too bad, but towards the end of the summer, it got kind of stagnant.
The boys got away with it. The girls got caught down there. Their mothers haul them home and they get paddled on.
Right.
Now, most of the moral fiber of the town in all the years we were in school and growing up was centered in the Baptist church. Even our commencement exercises weren't held in the little schoolhouse. They were always held at the church. Everything centered around that. And they controlled the town for a long, long time.
Yeah, there was a large school building on West Campus Road, and there were two portable buildings. They called them portable. Actually, they were just two small buildings. They each held two grades, and they each had one teacher, two grades. And then in the big building, well, we called it big. It had a second story with one big study hall.
Oh, it was so small.
And one room for English. And there was one room for kindergarten, first grade, second grade, third grade. And then there were a few rooms downstairs plus the
furnace room was in awe. The boys were most in awe of the furnace room because it wasn't much different. The girls would try to take tea there. Your girls didn't go in there. But when you did, it looked like a big basement with a huge furnace room. And all the naughty boys were taken to the furnace room and paddled. So that was the furnace room and the paddling room were dual purpose. And if anyone was seen walking with Mr. Mortimer, was it?
Mortimer?
Who was the janitor? Because he did the
paddling.
Mr. Roscoe. If someone was seen ushered there, they knew they were going to get a paddling. In the furnace room. We'd go all through the school. The town had one little bitty restaurant. I don't think the restaurant, the whole eating area, was any larger than a very large dining room, would you say?
No.
Little counters, not much different than a restaurant. And that was the only restaurant in town. And I think the chicken dinner for $1.25, I'm funny. For $1.25, it was a huge piece of chicken, and mashed potatoes and gravy, and maybe soup, and pie went with that, and coffee, and rolls. That's true. And the people that, like myself, that worked in it, you worked 7 days a week. The ones that worked in it, you worked 7 days a week. The Sunday was a big day. You worked 8 to 10 hours, sometimes 12 hours if they were busy, and your wages were $5 the whole week. And you were very, very lucky if someone left you a dime tip. Most did not tip in those times, but once in a while someone would leave you a dime. And that was the only restaurant, and it had a Nickelodeon. And in the rural community, they only played country tunes, which weren't in favor. Then they are now the country is tuned for soul, I guess. And that's what was around there. And remember that back then.
That was owned by some people named Fouts, and they later moved out of there and went to Dundee. They had a larger restaurant.
Coffee Cup. They opened up the Coffee Cup in Dundee. In fact, that building's still there. I think Leo Bolton uses it to put junk in, doesn't he?
No.
That's not it?
The building is still used as a restaurant.
Is that the same one?
Same one. Mm-hmm. And
there's a barber shop.
They put an addition on the back. Yeah, when I was little, there were two barbers. George Fleck. They were both on what they called Main Street. George Fleck, he was down by the creek, and my grandfather was up near Lewis Avenue. And I think there's still two barbers in there.
And for such a small town to support way back then, two barbers seemed strange, except I think hair was cut more often because, you know, it was shaved an inch above the ear. And if it got a little bit, just a little bit edging towards the ears, then everybody had a funny haircut. So I think that's how it could support two.
Yeah, when I was small, the the haircut started off at 26, then they were 25, then they were 35, then they jumped to 15, then 75. And they never did make any money at that time, cutting hair.
There's a pool table, one of the barbershops.
Yeah, pool in both of them. One table in each shop. But they only charged nickel a game.
No buses, everybody walked to school. There wasn't a system. And no one thought anything of it except for fortunate enough to get a ride. And believe it or not, no matter what the weather, ice, snow, we went to school. You never looked out to see what the weather was. You got up and went, and the surprise hit you when you got out on the road. You didn't really pay attention, you just got up. Sometimes it'd be deep, you could hardly fall through the ditch, and it really went, didn't you?
Right.
Just didn't occur to you. You went in the rain, the pouring rain you went.
Well, Joan had to walk 2 miles. I had to walk a little less than a mile. But in bad weather, 2 miles is a long way.
Yeah.
But you didn't say, Mother, it's raining, we can't go to school today. It never occurred to you. It's raining, you better put, you know, the raincoats aren't nice like they are now. Although they held off the rain, they were like oilcloth. You just took off and went, put the boots on.
As far as recreation for young people, there really wasn't much. The boys, we played ball off and on. And then when I was about 8 or 9 years old, there was a man named Victor Beck that later became a police inspector for the state police. He had a job. It was in the recreation field anyway. And he taught us boys to play, and then he'd take us around in different towns to play other teams. That was great.
And the girls said nothing. There was nothing a girl could do for recreation at the school except go home.
And then as far as swimming goes, there just wasn't anything to do except these quarries and ponds around. But as we grew older, we went over to a place called Centennial in Sylvania. And I never will forget the time I got on the diving board pretty high up on the cliff. It doesn't look bad when you're on the ground, but when you get up there, it looks like a long way down. Well, I jumped off, and when I got about halfway down, I decided I wasn't going to hit very well, so I turned around and went back up. And that's the last time I jumped off of there.
Movies were 10 cents. 10 cents to get go to the movies.
In the summertime, once a week, for a few years there, they'd have what they called a town movie. And somebody came in with a projector and a regular movie.
Set it up in a lot.
And they'd set it up by the firehouse or up by Cars Park. In an open place.
And you'd stand around and watch them.
Yeah, stand and watch the movie.
Called the Mosquitoes in.
I think the, what few businessmen there were gave in donations to whoever
so
liked to show the movie.
They didn't pay to get in?
No, they didn't take up a collection, nothing. But that was everybody, a lot of people showed up for them. Free recreation, free movie, and we didn't have television.
You could sit down, and if you sat down, you couldn't see, unless you could get towards the front. But after you got back, everybody could sit around and watch the movie.
Okay, of course you had radio. And all the kids liked Lone Ranger, Little Orphan Moon. And what was the one that was on Saturday night?
I don't know which night they were on, but I know it was very long. The mummers? Mummers, right. The mummers. Squeaky. It wasn't called. After that? But all the kids have to do is hear the squeak of that door, the mummers, and that big door squeaking. You could huddle, and you just, you could imagine all sorts of things. So it really makes your imagination run over time.
The town of Temperance really hasn't grown much as the town proper. It's about the same
size. You mean
the
size building stuff?
Yeah. But everything is all subdivisions on the outskirts, all the way around, and lots of them and a lot of people. But at that time, everybody, when we were young, you knew everybody in town.
If somebody
didn't matter who
walked
it was
down the street, which was really true, and you didn't recognize them, they were strangers, they didn't live here. Everybody knew every face within miles around. Within miles. If you see them, oh, where are you supposed to see them? Because if you didn't recognize them, they lived in no house within miles of a square mile. You just knew. Everybody knew everybody's name. Isn't that strange that we wish? I wonder why.
Well, there weren't that many people. And they all showed up
at school. All the grades. We didn't just know our own grades. We knew the names of the kids in first grade, and we knew the names of the seniors. We knew how many brothers and sisters they had. Because we were small enough to help.
Well,
sure. But you paid attention. We knew who was sick and who wasn't. But I, with all, it sounds like nothing, and yet I had a marvelous time in high school. We had plays, we would give a play. I loved that, and we'd get involved in that. They had a glee club, it was horrible. Oh, it was horrible. They, people listened to it, and they'd clap and everything. And some could sing, some couldn't. I tried out for the glee club one. It was horrible. But that was just in me. This is true, I did try out for it. It was kind of a dare, actually. You try for a part. And the woman that was the director, had it at all. I never saw anyone laugh so hard in all my life. She's such a serious woman. She thought that was so funny. It was so awful, I think.
Yeah.
Burns Kennedy and myself, he's bad as I was. And we thought, let's have some fun, let's try out for, because you would try out for parts of the operetta. Oh my. But we had a good time. We had a lot of good time.
Sounded like a crow and canary or something like that.
I can remember that when we were a little smaller, everybody had to do a little something. They didn't leave anybody out. And at one of the May Day things, you know, where everybody kids did something, my brother and I were the same mother, Emma's for the May Day occasion, we sang it together. I can remember how awful it was, and everybody clapped and said it was wonderful.
Okay.
And he had that heavy, deep voice, you know. But I really can't sing. I always wished I could. I'm sorry to say, I really can't sing. But we were up there doing it because it was required of us. It was terrible. My mother thought it was wonderful, though. And we sang Mother. It must have been a May Day thing. But the kids would all have to do something when we were trying to sing Mother and it for the May Day thing. Poem is only that. I can't remember it anymore. See, I didn't start out here until I was sixth grade. We lived in Toledo until we moved out here. And the same thing in Toledo. There was not bus service then. But we still went to school every day, and we had 10 blocks. It was hard for me when I came out here to get used to the talking. Everything was by miles or half a mile. They said, where does so-and-so live? Well, it's a mile off and you turn east or west. And we were totally lost because we never gave directions like that. It would be so many blocks towards Virginia or so many blocks towards something else. And I thought that was the same thing. It was strange to me to hear things, directions given east and west. But I thought it was backwards. It would be a backwards way of doing, you know, or a very rural thing. But as you get along, you're not bright enough to know if you know it's south, east, and west, because you couldn't follow directions like that. But everything was in blocks. But we walked 10 blocks to school.
My class ended up with 20. And some of them are, there's about five dead. And some of them still live in Temperance. Vern Scott is in charge of Harnett Funeral Home. And Vern Amy still lives here. And let's see, who else? I'd have to have a picture of Bill McKinley.
Velma Jackson just died. Russ Brunson, Jamaica. Lucille Seeley is in California. Girl Collins in Lake Havasu, Arizona.
I don't know, but I know our reading material that would have been considered adult or high school level for pleasure would probably bore fourth graders today. That the literature, the books, or the fun books we read that we thought were really great things would be so last at, wouldn't they?
Oh, yeah. Like, Scott is dead with the when he's a doctor. His name was Burns, also Dr. Burns Scott. And Mrs. Scott had a brother nicknamed Red. And Red bought spicy detective books, which Scotty and I thought were really great. And Scotty'd read them, and then he'd give them to me, and I'd read them. And of course, anytime you ever read any of them, you'd have to
sneak around
and hide to read them.
It makes you smile.
Today they wouldn't come off the bus.
No, but you have to kind of sneak around the results.
Yeah.
That's what most of the girls for recreation, because there was no place to go or anything to do, would read books. We read a lot
of books all winter long. Not much in summer, but all winter. Just read.
Yeah, you did too at home. You read until it was time to go to bed. The young people stay in bed more now than anyone I knew when I was. None of us stayed in bed. That was new to me after I got older, to see people laid in bed. Nobody stayed in bed. Everybody got up and had breakfast. How early, I don't know. It would depend, but it would be like somewhere between 5:30, 6, 7. That would be late. And it was unheard of to get in the clock. And if you would set an alarm, someone would giggle. Who sets an alarm for 8? Because nobody's in bed at 8. And an alarm was set for 4:30 or 5, but nobody set an alarm for 7:30 or 8. Because you're already up. Nobody sleeps. But also, you went to bed early. You need to go to bed at 3. They bank the furnace for the night. You're glad to get to bed because it's cold.
Some of my best friends were Burns Scott, Russ Brunt, Bill McKinley, Gerald Collins. We, Joe Adams, who was killed in the war, but we were the ones that traveled around together. Don Meinhardt also, but he was a class ahead of us. But Scotty and I, from little boys on up, we were friends. And we used to go out in the woods over in back of the funeral home. It was Kenny's Woods. Play Tarzan. Had a great time back there, swinging on those vines. So one year we happened to get into a bunch of poison ivy vines. And I was covered. I never had. This was terrible. I had poison ivy all over. And I don't remember if he had it or not, but I think he did, but not like I did.
You know, our educational level, we always thought it was inferior and that we didn't get a good education. I suppose it wasn't, well, not suppose, we know it wasn't as expansive as today's education, or as varied. But I think back of how well we read and how well we could figure as the high school students we see today that can't figure percentages. There wasn't any of us that wouldn't, if someone said that's 30% off, that couldn't click off the answer, or 45%. We could figure, we could read very well, and two of the women in my small class are doctors. They're actually doctors today. So maybe we did have a good foundation if it wasn't as varied and wasn't scientific, so they didn't give you that, but we did know how to. We could figure mathematics enough to make sure our life went on well. We could do minor accounting. We were taught that in school. Most of us could write quite well. We all knew how to write letters. We all knew how to fill out applications properly. And now I see that if you give people something to fill out, they can't even fill it out. Now, while we knew how to do that, and they don't today, that's hard for me to understand, because they often don't. Or maybe it was smaller classes, and they make sure you learned it. I don't know. But that's true. We read better than I see high schools that children read today.
Spend more time reading, so.
Well, but I think there wasn't anything else to do. They made everything go to the inside. We didn't have a library. Where'd you get a book? School had some, and then,
you
know. Well, I'll tell you, for a while, we went to Toledo and we went to the library. We did a whole bunch of them. It was a whole bunch of them. Because all the bookstores didn't exist like they are now.
There was a library upstairs, yeah, but it was still one of them. West, north of them.
When your dad was a little boy, that was kind of like an outing. Two or three times a week, we'd go in the library and we'd all browse around and pick up books and bring them back. And he was just kind of one of the things. We look forward to going into the library.
That's interesting.
Hmm?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. My grandma. Grandma taught music and she sang around all the doing. Funerals and weddings. That's what she taught me to sing real young. And I'd go in and she'd play and I'd sing. When I got old enough, I wouldn't go in there anymore.
You Yeah, they did, honey. We didn't have them,
yeah.
But there were a lot of automobiles. We aren't that far.
Yeah.
There were a lot of automobiles, but Grandpa and I, just, our family didn't have one. They did later,
yeah.
But
more
people didn't have them when I was a little girl than did, though. Then as time went on, more and more had them. But the earlier, even in town, everybody didn't have a car.
Our first car was a Mom bought it from John Whitman, a 1928 Model A Ford. A really nice car. But it was about 10 years old when she bought it.
That old?
I imagine. Yeah. Maybe not that old. And it lasted a long time. In fact, we never did wear it out. He finally sold it to somebody up at Petersburg and he put a paper out. Oh, we have another one. Then the next car I had was a 1937 airplane Hudson. It was a beauty. Because the lady in Toledo that had it hadn't, the furthest been out of Toledo was Wampus Lake. He was actually the only one that drove it. And I bought it for $275. It was really a nice car. But then it sat around for about 4 years while I was in the Army, and when I came home, it was no good after that.
Why should we talk about these things if it was hard at that time? But they were pulling out of the Depression then, and it really was a lot worse before that.
Yeah.
Because when I was a really little girl, there really wasn't even enough food. It was really rough, and nobody could get work, and there was no such thing as welfare or aid or anything. I can remember people trying to get coal mess in town in Toledo. There were no jobs. So actually, these things that sound to you, we didn't feel like we were oppressed or didn't have things. It seemed like life was pretty good. But see, it was a little bit after the Depression and things were getting better.
because any work is better than no work. If someone's making 25 a week, that's just great. Because after the depression, and they started getting work, that's about what they made a week at that time for. And they said, oh my gosh, you can't have to work. You know, he's making $25 a week. They bought a lot of things. A dollar. Every Sunday we had a roast. And a dollar bought a huge roast, like 5-pound roast. Big beef roast. The roast you see in the store now is small in comparison, but then you see how awake it is.
Yeah,
well,
that's true.
Grandma Shacklin, a young woman, had, you're talking about my mother, which would be your great-grandmother. She was born and raised in Cincinnati, and they lived rather nicely. And they went swimming, but it was always lakes or private lakes. They never went, there wasn't any such thing as public swimming.